This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 430, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. She packed my bags last night, pre-flight. 0 hour, 9 a.m. And I'm gonna be high as a kite by then. I miss the earth so much, I miss my wife. Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 430. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and joining me as always are Paul Montgomery.
Yes.
And filling in this week is, hold on, let me forget, Josh Flanagan. Is that how you pronounce it, Josh?
How is this mic? Hello?
It's Josh Flanagan, he's back!
Josh is back!
Quieter.
I'm a little surprised, I'll be honest.
The kids are off at boarding school. We're ready to go.
It all goes so fast.
Mazel tov, my friend.
Ah, well, I am.
We are a fanboy. We like comics. If we read a bunch of comics, one of us picks the best book they read that week. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about that book on this podcast, as well as other books of the week, other topics of interest, all kinds of fun stuff.
We should get Josh caught up on all the things that happened in March 2014. Like, they found that trove of previously unpublished Jack Kirby, Wedge Antilles comics.
Yeah.
If he drew that, he had no idea what he was drawing. Yeah. I don't know. I got a spaceship and a monster.
Before we get to the show, quick reminder.
40 pages in by Thursday.
It's a spoiler. He did it. There'll be spoilers on the show. So if you haven't read your books, pause the show, come back. This week, in a remarkable coincidence, Josh had the pick of the week.
I know. It's because I was supposed to have it the last 3 weeks. So, oops, there's a little behind-the-curtain business right there. Hey, before I get started, I just wanted to say thank you. A lot of people have said very nice things about my new son and be congratulatory of me for...
doing nothing?
Well, pretty much. I mean, at least up until that point. After that, right. I've done a lot because babies mess you up, dude. But everything's really good, and I'm happy, and things are well, and I appreciate all the stuff that you guys even covering for me as I just lay about doing nothing, which really isn't exactly correct. Also, a slight warning, I've lost, say, 35% of my cognitive ability.
Well, is anyone going to notice?
I think is my new favorite like all-purpose joke.
So, good luck. Good luck, everyone.
Pick of the week. This week sucked, by the way. I mean, it didn't really suck, but, like, it was a tough week. I was like, I don't know what to pick. Like, everything was, like, this was kind of good, but it wasn't like, oh, wow, this is great.
This was a week, like, almost every book I read ended with, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was okay.
It was like a 3.0 grade point average a week. Yeah. Is what it was.
You'll graduate, yeah. But you know, no one's gonna write home about it.
No, I mean, you know, you'd be lucky if you get an insurance policy someday. That's economics for you. So I went with, I stared at my list and I looked and then I was like, you know, I think the thing that I enjoyed the most is sort of an overall craft and sort of a surprise that I liked it as much as I did. And the thing that I'm looking forward to reading more of is Starlight, number 2. From Mark Miller and Goran Parlov out of Image Comics. You may remember this as a sort of the debut issue was sort of John Carter 40 years later. He comes back. Nobody believes him.
It's like John Carter, the epilogue.
Yeah.
The sad, sad, depressing epilogue.
Yeah. And so a little alien kid comes down and he's like, you got to come with me back. And he's like, I can't go. I got stuff to do. And then he just goes, all right, I'll go. Basically, after he looked at his sad, empty dinner table because his kids have abandoned him. And I think the thing, this is sort of what we said about the first issue. The thing that's surprising me, I guess, is that this is yet another side of Mark Miller. Like, if you were to give this to me and ask me who wrote this and I didn't know, I don't think I would have come up with Mark Miller.
I never would have said Miller.
And I like that about it a lot because for a little while, you could spot a Mark Miller, you know, like George Costanza.
The thing is, he has this level, and he's written books like this before. I would put Superman Red Sun in this sort of vein of
1985.
Comics. Right, exactly. It's just that I think he hit upon a very lucrative vein of writing.
Yeah.
And why change horses in midstream? Yeah. If you're getting a lot of books sold, you're making, you know, having movies made out of them. Why would you do that? But he has this ability. He just hasn't exploited it very much lately because he's got all the other books going on. But
so if someone did ask you who wrote this, who would you say? Because I had an inkling when I opened up this first page. I was like, that's a BKV first page.
Yes. I thought exactly that. And you reminded me of it. I thought exactly that. This does, it felt very much like a Brian Vaughn book. Right from the start. I think that's a really good one. It looks kind of like one, too. Like, it looks like the kind of aesthetic that I think his artists go for.
Such a great image. I mean, it's an opening splash page, and
it pulls you right in.
And it's got
don't
like,
shoot, I'm only 86.
Yeah.
And you're clearly looking at an adolescent boy.
Yep.
In a spacesuit.
They gave
I don't see age, Paul.
I don't see age, race.
I don't see race,
height,
age.
We're not going to explore that. Okay.
Everyone is well, just a
there's
blur.
Two things I really like. I just realized, as I said it, how the road they could go down. There's two things I really liked about this issue. One, I love the dynamic between the two characters. Mm-hmm. I thought the bitter, grumpy old man and the very plucky 12-year-old trying
oh my God,
to
it's up.
Recruit him back into war was a great pairing. I love to see these. I hope these guys spend a lot of time together going forward because it's nice. But also, Goran Parlov.
That was basically the other part that I was going to get to.
My favorite page of this whole book was the four panel sequence where he goes out, smokes a cigarette, and considers going back into space.
Yeah.
I mean, it's four vertical, horizontal panels filling the page. Very simple, just a man walking out in the field, takes a puff, two puffs of a cigarette. But it's just there's so much emotion and body and great body language and anatomy in it. It's just he's wonderful.
This is a weird note. I like the shape of the word balloons.
I know. I was noticing that because I looked and I can't pronounce the name of the letterer. So that probably
Marcos.
There you go. That's where they get you.
Sunjik.
Connor's the worst one at pronouncing names, and he's always the one who jumps to do it.
Well, he's
it's fun.
Our retired brethren is got a
Marco
Sunjik. Yeah, but there's little doohickeys on the letters.
Yeah, I know.
We don't know what those mean. I can tell you what that little accent mark means on a C if it's on an E, for example. But on a C,
The fuck is that?
What's the thing over the S? It's a V. That's like a Cadillac S.
But you're right about the balloons. They're not your standard sort of computer generated, or at least they don't look like it. They're very sort of rough and they look hand drawn. It doesn't always work necessarily with the text.
Yeah.
Sometimes the text is really small in it.
Mm-hmm.
But the shape of the balloons is interesting.
It
that's makes, for sure.
Gives it a bit of a hand drawn quality, at the very least, which I think is nice. It almost looks like when you read manga. And you know, like the words don't fit in it because they were originally drawn for that sort of like tall, thin Japanese characters. Looks a little like that. So maybe
there's a bit of a margin there, yeah.
They're just making it so that they can translate this to Czech, maybe. I don't know. but
it's probably Croatian,
I didn't read, was it Punisher Max? Was that where Goran Parlov sort of came from? I did read Fury Max, obviously, which we talked about to no end. I mean, I really, really fell in love with the work then. And I think that other than the fact that there's a crusty old man at the center of this, just like the other book, all of them, like it does have a different feel. Than
totally,
that book,
totally.
Obviously. And it's got these cool futurist retro Buck Rogers sort of.
Yeah, it's very.
Bubble helmets that are awesome. I actually also love the sequence where he goes back in the ship and flies it again for the first time in 40 years. He's like, I forgot how awesome this is to fly a spaceship, and goes zooming around. Before he takes off, he wants to zoom around Earth a bit and stuff it in some people's faces that I actually can't. I am flying a spaceship, you jerks.
He's going to show them all.
But he doesn't get to because the military intercepts him and he takes off.
And then sort of at the same time, like all of the scenes in his house are quiet and a little dark and you know, that sort of maudlin middle America in a field, like the sad Kents, basically.
Right.
You know, it's got all those dynamics, and he does it with not a lot of lines, you know, just very, very sparse, economical drawing, cartooning. And I really like it. And that, you know, that last, because of that, when you get to sort of the last spread of what's going on Tantalus, it's really it's.
I believe it's Tantalus.
Why?
I don't know.
It's like it's like right.
I'm just gonna mess with you all show just to see how sharp you are.
I like the sort of American sadness to it though. Yeah. It's like about Schmidt with rockets.
I don't think fish they're gonna oil. Put that on the cover.
Nebraska.
It's not for the cover. I'm not always trying to get blurbs. It's
the back page.
What it feels like to me.
I mean, on the surface, it's a slight issue in terms of story. It's just basically suiting up and going in a ship. But there's great character work in here. We were introduced to a great character. What is his name? The little kid's name.
Does he have a name?
Maybe he doesn't. He must have a name. Yeah.
Isn't he just like boy?
My name is Chris Moore.
Oh, there you go.
And it's just great. This is, if you're not a Miller fan, check out
his name is just Chris Moore, but he's pronouncing it with a Scottish accent. Chris Moore.
There you go.
Is that racist? I don't see race. I don't see accent.
I don't see age. We have a problem. I don't see age. You don't see race. We never knew who we're talking to.
I can't hear differentiations in speech. It's the whole world is a blur.
I see everything.
It was too late. The world had seen everything.
So I would definitely check that Starlight out. It's one of the better books that Image put out, but it's not one of those big high profile books. Yeah. You know, it's not getting a lot of the press or push. You know, like the Remender books or the Hickman books or the Fracture books. But it's really, really good.
It's a nice comic book experience, and when you put this together with what Miller's doing on Jupiter's Legacy, it's nice. It's a new era for Mark Miller for me, because I had completely written him off as a person I didn't want to read anymore.
Right. Yeah, even though I really enjoyed the first issue, I was like, I need that second issue to make sure that this isn't about, you know.
I had a feeling. I never lost faith in you, Mark Miller, after that first issue.
But no, it's good.
Yeah. Now, there's a couple of books we're going to talk about this week that at least Josh and I were on the fence about last month. And one of those being Moon Knight number 2, Warren Ellis, Declan Shalvey. This was a one-shot story. I guess so was the first one by definition. So, Josh, what do you think?
A big part of me, I wanted to make this a pick of the week. And the reason that I wanted to make it a pick of the week is that there were at least a number of panels that were some of the nicest panels.
Mm-hmm.
And like, literally, I just loved the composition of the, not even the page, which were fine. The storytelling is great. He's a great storyteller. But there's specifically... When Moon Knight arrives at the wherever the bad guy is, and there's one, it's the bottom panel of the page, and he jumps across to punch the bad guy, and all the stuff goes flying, and basically 2/3 of the panel is taken up by the cape, which just becomes white space.
White space, yeah.
And some of the detritus that's flying around from the table and stuff goes in front of it, and so it's marked in that way. I just thought that was gorgeous. That's such a nice looking panel. There's another one, like when he jumps off the roof and it's like sort of that big white silhouette shape. I really like the contrast of that. I don't know why there aren't more comics that look like this.
I liked the countdown in the beginning.
Yeah.
using the panels to count down the action. So they're usually 2, 4, 6, 8 panels, 7 panels, 6 panels, 5 panels, 4 panels. But it's not like they get bigger; they just disappear.
Yeah, that really felt like that felt like Warren Ellis to me.
Yeah,
that felt like sort of good old fashioned Warren Ellis.
And it's these multiple people from this organization, these mercenaries, and they're the handlers or whatever. They're the ones who pull the trigger, and this guy's the gun, and he's getting his revenge on them. And you're seeing them all assassinated with headshots, but it's sort of, it's non-linear. It's not as if they all, it's not synchronized so that it's all the headshots all at once. And you're kind of like, what is the connection here? Some of them are on phones and they're having their own.
Each page someone's getting shot.
Yeah. So they're having, so there is symmetry there. And I like that. It's sort of what are the connections between these people? Because when you see people assassinated, I think sometimes you first think, okay, they're victims, but there's something a little bit more complex going on. And so it was just weird. It was like, I don't know, the way the people are connected at first, you don't know how they're connected, and then you slowly piece it all together, and it's sort of like, I don't know, it's like Love Actually, but with being dead.
Did we see this Moon Knight costume last month?
No. The first issue was interesting because there was, and there's no color. It's all white. They didn't color it or do any value inside Moon Knight until he took his mask off, and then there's color in his face. So this one, there's some black and white to the costume. It's a more traditional Moon Knight costume. Just with sort of like Under Armour or something. It's a good look. I like it.
Now that all being said though, like I liked the sequence. I liked the technique used at the beginning, but at the end of it, like the story didn't do a ton for me. It left me a little bit cold. So while I really liked the approach, I really liked the techniques, I really liked the aesthetics of it, I kind of don't care.
It feels like it has the substance of like a 4 or 8 pager.
Yes.
Stretched out into, although all those details make for interesting storytelling, but it is a very sparse kind of narrative.
Yeah.
It's like a fable almost.
It is, but it's also like it's Warren Ellis. It feels to me like Warren Ellis experimenting with the form, which is a thing that I love that he does, but ultimately it feels a little like an experiment. There is not an emotional component to this at all. Which makes it difficult to connect with for me.
I will say, though, that the stuff they did do with the form, I think, buys it another issue for me.
Absolutely.
Because I do kind of want to see what they do next. It was, as you said, those panels where the cape takes up all that white space. I love their playing with the white space, which is normally a space that is steamrolled over or hidden or gotten rid of completely.
But that's where we put the word balloons. You know,
right, but some comics don't even have you know, they don't. It's just that's a space that's ignored. It's the gutters. It's
so design wise, I think Declan and Jordy are doing some of their best work easily. Mm-hmm. I think it's wonderful. I'm not. You know, I wish I had something more of a connection with it. I've never been a Moon Knight fan. Like I don't. It's not a thing for me. So maybe that helps.
You don't see color, so you have a hard time seeing him.
I can't see him at all because white is all colors. So right. I can't.
That's true.
Yeah, it's difficult.
Now I don't know if I first of all, if I had to pick this week, I would have been upset because
I was.
I don't know what I would have done. But I think I would have made Ultimate Comics Spider-Man 200 my pick of the week. I think.
Okay.
See,
I'm just goddamn glad I didn't have to make the choice.
It was. Here's the thing about Ultimate Spider-Man 200. Which, by the way, they conveniently go back to the... No, now it's 200. Like
it's the Marvel way.
Make your damn mind up, first of all.
So this is the 200th anniversary issue. Basically, it's the 200th issue of Ultimate Spider-Man.
Get off the pot, number. There's a guy there. This is the Marvel number. And the thing about this is... So basically what it was a sort of a memorial for Ultimate Universe Peter Parker. 2 years after his death, where all of the people got together at a house... And they reminisced and thought about what it would have been like. And the problem with this was that it was really well done and it was entertaining. And there was, of course, the trademark Bendis cavalcade of pinups at the end by different artists. This feels like a stock Bendis move and there was no reason for it to happen now.
Well, it's because it's the anniversary issue. I mean, it's sort of the comic book trademark is that.
Yeah, well, but it's a anniversary. They did this already.
No, but it's 200. I mean, it's the anniversary is taken, not literally. It's the big milestone number. And in the old days, you have this every time you hit 100 or 200.
Yeah.
You know, Batman 300, 400, 500, 600 all have these kind of stories where you would, you just play around with different artists and you would tell a story. And I think going back and honoring Peter was good, I thought, because also we have now lived with Miles long enough that him relating to Peter is more powerful than it was in the beginning.
Yes.
And hanging out with his family was more powerful than it was in the beginning. So I liked it for that reason. I thought the only downside to this issue was there was like a lot of brunette girls in black dresses.
Yeah.
And I didn't know exactly who was talking. And I'm looking at a panel now where it's three of them, and I don't know who is who. I think that's Mary Jane. The red hair is a little red. Then who are the two? I get it if I really drill down into it, but look at this group shot. There's one, two, three, and then Mary Jane's hair is dark, so I don't never know. And that, when it was a headshot,
Kitty
I never
really is knew. In there, and Spider Girl is in there,
and then the Bomb Girl and
Bomb Girl. Right.
At one point, I reached out to Connor and I was like, "Did that ultimatum thing end? Whatever that was." Like, I don't.
It sort of ended with a fizzle,
or well, I didn't see it. I didn't.
It did end, but I didn't realize that was the end.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, I went back and looked at those issues, and it does say, you know, coming next, and it has those pages from the new books, the covers. But I don't think reading the actual story and not the house ads made me realize the story had ended. So when this came out, I was like, wait a minute, are we still...
I feel like I missed an issue of something.
We talked about it, I think, where Thor knocked Galactus into the negative zone, and that ended the threat, but... I'm not exactly sure.
Kitty Pride saved him. I remember, like...
Yeah, Kitty Pride was the weapon to get inside Galactus's head and all that stuff. I just really... I mean, I love this character, the Peter Parker Ultimate character, so much. And first of all, it's impressive that Bendis has written 200 issues of this book.
Sure.
Really. I mean, that's a feat I don't think people really fully grasp.
Technique, voice, absolutely down. I mean, even if I'm complaining about it, I don't complain about spending time with these characters. I love these characters.
To me, those double page spreads where everybody went around the room saying what they would have thought would have happened to Peter if he had gotten to grow up, which is already a heartbreaking discussion. By the time I got to Kitty Pryde and her whole thing was them married and she wouldn't say it, really got me. Because I remember those issues when they were dating.
Yeah, that was cool. Mm-hmm.
And those were a great relationship. So, you know, Miles thinks he'd be a sidekick, and Gwen thinks he would have gone street level, and whoever this was in the first page thinks he would have... Oh, that was May, Aunt May, and you know, somebody thinks he'd be leading the Avengers, but then he gets to Kitty, and it's just about them being happy and in a relationship.
Just so I don't really think that way.
And it was just heartbreaking.
Yeah.
You know, because of that 200-issue history. So I thought that was what really worked for this issue, was that...
And yeah, the two-year anniversary thing, it's a contrivance, but I do like it being set in, you know, Aunt May's house, and because that's where a lot of my favorite scenes from the series took place. I love that, you know, it sort of became this, like, yeah, it just became this sort of, like, boarding house for all of these, you know, motley, you know, young superheroes. And I love the moment where Jameson, you know, cruises by in his limousine, and he sees everyone having such a good time outside and just says, keep driving. And, he misses Spider-Man too, but this is not a place for him to be.
And as far as set piece jokes go, I really loved the Iceman flying, you know, traveling between Firestorm and Johnny Storm and Firestar and Johnny Storm.
Firestar and Johnny
Storm. And his ice thing melts because there's too hot. He just falls off the panel. I thought that was really funny. But... I like this issue quite a bit for all those reasons.
All right, fine. Still, I'm saying you're wrong. Pick of the week.
I understand. This food made me hungry, though.
Yeah?
All that food?
Yeah, that was nice. It was.
Paul! Yeah. What is Caliban?
Caliban number one is a new book from Avatar by Garth Ennis.
It's not from Valiant because it sounds like it's from Valiant.
It does sound like it's from Valiant, doesn't it? This was cool. This was sort of the setup of the original Alien film, where you've got this sort of this freighter out in deep space, and there are passengers, you know, in cryosleep in pods, and you've got the staff that has to run the ship just in case anything happens, and they're going through warp, and they run into something, and when you're running into something at warp speed, and it's this strange alien spaceship artifact thing, that's bad news. And so the two ships sort of fuse together, and there are people stuck like in between You know, so it's not a crash. It's just like with weird warp technology, they fuse together into one big mess. And so bad things happen. It's like when you have like when you beam somebody up and there's an accident with the transporter and what we got back wasn't pretty.
Right.
So it's that kind of nastiness. And but yeah, they've basically crashed into this this alien spaceship, and things are probably going to go very, very badly. And it's New Ennis. It's like the art is serviceable,
is
I guess.
Is it Avatar House style?
Yeah. You know, so it's nothing really to write home about, but it's you know, it's not bad. And there are some interesting moments where it nears like, what do I want to say? It's like, I don't want to say it's like, but it's not bad. And I like that premise of deep space, and sort of we've basically signed away our lives and gotten these huge paychecks to just spend years and years ferrying people across the black. And the one of them is just like, I don't even know why we need navigators out here or you know, response teams, because it's not like anything can happen. And then they run into something. So,
well, that was dumb to say.
Yeah, that was dumb to say. So, but I would recommend it. I'm not entirely sure where it's going. So it looks like fun.
Magneto has a beard or not a beard in this series?
Magneto has no hair. Magneto has alopecia in this.
I prefer my Magneto's beards.
I like bald Magneto. I like modern Magneto. I've always been, however I felt about mutants and their filthiness, I've always liked Magneto. He's a very interesting. He's not necessarily a hero. He's not necessarily a villain. I wouldn't even call him an anti-hero. He's sort of an anti-villain. So Magneto number two, this is by Cullen Bunn and Gabriel Hernandez. This is really strong. This is, I think, far and away Cullen Bunn's best work at Marvel. I'd put it up there with The Sixth Gun. And I've always really enjoyed Magneto as a character. He's not quite a hero. He's not quite a villain. I wouldn't even say he's an anti-hero. He's sort of an anti-villain. And if you like that opening section of X-Men First Class, where he's a Nazi hunter, this is sort of like that. This is,
I like that very much, Lois.
What is he hunting? Bargains?
In the first issue, he discovers a guy who was unwittingly turned into a human sentinel. An Omega Sentinel. And he didn't know that about him, so he's just sort of like a sleeper agent, and that got destroyed. So now he's trying to figure out who is turning people into sentinels, and it takes him to this tent city where people are basically being taken and by some shady organization turned into these sleeper agent sentinel things that are half, you know, they're human but they have cybernetic components. And it's not clear whether they know exactly what's going on with them, and they're being sent on missions that they don't entirely know about. And there are these great flashback sequences to him in Nazi-occupied Europe as a kid, and you know, stealing food to survive. And he got to see how ruthless even good people could be, just to stay alive. And it feels like a crime book with just a weird supernatural element to it. It doesn't necessarily feel like an X-Men book at all. And Hernandez's art kind of reminds me in places of like Sean Phillips. It's really strong. Jordy Belair's doing colors on this. It's
you got Connor on. You guys raised an eyebrow.
You guys would like
this. We both went quiet as I was contemplating, so I don't know what Josh would do, but I was like,
This, I think this is my
book. It better be pretty fucking good, because there's a lot of books.
No, I think you would like this. And Jordy Belair is doing something, again, like whenever she colors a book, it's, you know, a very thoughtful approach, and it's appropriate to the tone of that book. And
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with her. Who does she do?
Some beautiful sequences. The flashback sequences are all sort of like monotone blue. Monochrome blue. And
see, Josh doesn't see color, so
I don't hear color. I know that
it's gonna be a problem. So the color terms are problems. Aquaman and the Others is the second Aquaman book I don't know that anybody actually asked for. I'm an huge Aquaman fan. I didn't necessarily even ask for this book, but it's here you go. You got two Aquaman books now.
And this isn't Jeff Parker. This is
actually Dan Juergens writing and Lan Medina on art. And this was one of those fine books, but there was a couple of elements that I thought were worth mentioning in this book. And that one is, you know, this is Aquaman leading a team called the Others, and they're all new characters. And, you know, in a time when there used to be something people don't talk about as much anymore, but people used to always say, where are the new characters out of Marvel and DC? Well, there's five of them here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 4 to 5. And, you know, they're not great characters, but they're new and they're interesting.
Are they fish-based or?
No, they're all different. One is sort of...
One is... No, I mean, like, well, it's like eel guy.
All the new Marine characters is what I want to know then.
There's a guy called Prisoner of War who sort of summons the ghosts of dead soldiers, and then there's one that's sort of very much like Vixen. Her name is Yawara, and she actually talks to the animals in the jungle like Aquaman does. So they're somewhat similar, and they all have these artifacts that they. One is called the Operative. He's like a spy. They all have these artifacts that wield immense power, but the story in this issue is that the artifacts are losing that power. They rely on these things for their powers to do what they do. And as they're on all their separate missions, they start malfunctioning and they can't do the things they're all in trouble.
Is there any chance that this book popped out of a wormhole?
Well, it didn't feel as anachronistic as, say, you know, like Green Arrow did originally. Although it's certainly written in an old style. And the thing is, Dan Juergens is He's one of those master comic book storytellers. He tells a very confident superhero story. It's a bit retro. It's not as retro as I've seen other things go to DC, but it's certainly of a style, but it's done very well in that style. And that's what I thought was worth mentioning.
A weird title, Aquaman. Like,
it's like they just gave up thinking about
Aquaman, etc.
Basically, that could be the company. Name.
Aquapals.
So I mean, I don't remember the name. They mentioned it originally when they showed up. It's not like they're not the Justice League. They're the Others that he hangs out with, or something
Aquaman
stupid like.
And some people who are not fish.
Right. So I don't know if I'm going to continue on. I was more curious than anything because I do like Aquaman. But and there's apparently pointing to the next big DC event in this book.
Oh well, that's a good reason to jump on board.
In which there's a hint of it, and then that there's some. Future full of robot superhero zombies coming. I don't know. It doesn't look good. But if you like Dan Juergens in that era, I think you probably would really like this book. And I did like that era. So I enjoyed it, but I didn't, you know, it was one of those books where it was fine. It was fine. Lan Medina's a good artist. It was better than I thought it was going to be. I'll put it that way.
All right. So.
Damning with faint praise. I'm not trying to.
Treading water.
Someone else talk.
Aquaman.
If you need to buy some more aquarium gravel. For your aquarium, you should head on over to ifanboy.com/Amazon. That's our aptly named Amazon portal where we get a little piece of the action for what you're buying anyway.
We get 1% of all Amazon sales worldwide.
Sunken ship that you want to put in there or snorkel. So you can be like one of the others.
Get one of those treasure chests that opens up and the water bubbles out.
Can I get one of them hermit crabs with a Mets painted on it, something like that? Can I get one of those?
Then you just have to go outside to get one of those.
Not anymore.
I don't know where you live. Do hermit
you can
crabs
also help.
Stalk the streets of Philadelphia? Is that a thing? And if so, you need to call someone. Because that's not supposed to happen.
Infestation.
You can also go to ifanboy.com/registration. You can donate $3 a month or $30 a year, whatever you like.
Or any amount. There's
Paul
also
any amount, really.
Paul will send you a hermit crab for your. This is not true. Paul will send you a hermit crab. Not true. For your contribution, and he will put a mural on its shell.
He will paint your favorite sports team on the shell.
That's good.
What is this? This is a dead cockroach in an envelope with a broken shell.
Paul's got problems.
And he just cut the letters N and Y out of the newspaper.
So we thank everyone who registers or uses the Amazon portal. We appreciate everyone for helping us keep the lights on.
I'm about an hour away from hermit crabs. I could get you hermit crabs.
Maryland?
About an hour. New Jersey.
Balmer?
Yeah. Head over Jersey, and they've got plenty of hermit crabs, I guess.
They have plenty of something. They're
dehydrated. Listen.
The problem is you can't get the jersey because the bridges are shut down.
Yeah, that's your
problem.
Always
with the shutting down.
That's what they. That's what I hear they do now.
Detective Comics number 30.
They shut your bridges down.
Detective Comics 30. This was the first issue written and drawn by new creative team Francis Manapal and Brian Buccoletto. You may recall they were the team on The Flash. And I think much like The Flash before this book, it looks beautiful. The story was fine.
I have a question about this.
Yeah.
With the exception of Bruce Wayne, who are these people?
They're all new characters.
I don't recognize. Are they from a story that had already happened?
No.
Motocross Girl.
They were not well introduced.
Motocross Girl.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I just figured they were. He met them at this benefit thing, and that's really.
It's a lot of Bruce Wayne.
Well, nothing wrong with that.
It's a lot of Bruce Wayne and Bruce Wayne deals. My thing with this is that sometimes when you see a creative team, you're like, I would never have pegged them for a Batman book.
Right.
And that could be interesting. This is...
However...
I still think I wouldn't peg them for a Batman book necessarily. They don't quite have the Batman tone. And not that it has to be one way specifically, but...
It is not a tone that seems to work at this time.
It just... Yeah.
The resonance is not quite there. I was seriously, like, I read halfway through it and I was like, I don't know what I'm reading. And
it's very pretty.
This. Yeah, but, you know.
The layouts are somewhat odd.
Guys, we need to stop Mateo Scalera before he destroys us all. He's a monster.
Black Science number 5, also very, very good.
He's a monster. Yeah, look at that last double page spread of him falling into that hole and the creatures in the ground and the angle of it and the
I just liked the reveal of the alternate version of the person and you don't know whether to trust them or not and
I just don't right.
No, I don't either, but I don't know who to trust. Like the main character's not a good guy.
No, he's a dick.
But are these other ones?
But the other alternate version has scars.
Yeah.
So, he's an eye patch away from being...
I love how, just like, this
but
is...
Rooster
this,
Cogburn?
This book yes. is like a, it's like a, it's like a really high-tempo punk song all the time.
Yeah. Ah! I was starting to lose the thread a little bit when all the new characters started showing up, but it could be because I was really tired when I read it, which is very likely.
I can apply that condition to all of my reading and activities.
Remember last week when I said read in the shower? Read in the shower. Keeps you awake.
My laminate machine broke, Paul.
Yeah, I know.
It broke. And it was good. It was really good, though. I think this is...
I like a process where you walk into the bathroom, you fire up your machine with your stack of books and possibly a digital device. You turn on the shower. It starts to warm up. Things get steamy. You're just laminating away. Laminating, laminating, laminating. You're halfway through the first book and it goes... Oh, come on. I went to this effort.
Really pruney by the end.
Yeah. I think these books are ruined anyway.
But I also like the revealedness that Kadir has been revealed as the guy who sabotaged the machine in the first place.
That's pretty
sweet. That wasn't nice of him. That wasn't cool. Shouldn't sabotage that.
Even if it's not true, though, it's like that suggestion. You're putting it out there. I love that.
Right.
Is it true?
Yeah, totally. Could be.
I wanted to mention Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy Prelude number 1, which I guess is a digital thing.
Yes, sounds like it.
And I read it digitally, at least. I had my arms well out of the shower as I was reading. This is a good introduction to the movie version of the Guardians of the Galaxy, which is slightly different.
Why would you go there?
The comics version.
Let the movie unveil before you.
Well... I went there. I probably wouldn't have if it didn't have Abnett and Lanning's name on it. And that's where I came to love the Guardians of the Galaxy. And I was very excited to see anything from Abnett and Lanning back at Marvel. And so they don't necessarily write together anymore, but they somehow collaborated on this. And this is an introduction to the Karen Gillan Nebula character. Yeah.
Who's Karen Gillan?
The actress who plays Nebula in the film.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
She's on Doctor Who.
Kieran Gillen.
Not to be confused with Kieran Gillen. Yeah, she's known for Doctor Who.
I didn't know if that maybe he had a twin.
We haven't confirmed that's not true.
still talking about the book. She is basically the spiritual sister of Gamora, who's one of the anti-heroes in the film. And at this point in the story, they're acolytes for Thanos and Ronan the Accuser, and they're running around doing doing nasty things, criminal deeds, and they're very mercenary towards each other. It's all competition all the time. And even Gamora, who is going to be the hero that we're rooting for in this movie, will turn on her sister, her surrogate sister, and leave her for dead. And by the end of this, Nebula, who's already been in a back-to-tank several times, ends up caught in this electric net thing, and she is left with a knife, and she cuts her arm off, basically, to escape this trap and get back to Thanos. And it's pretty fun. And I think it gives me hope for an interesting, compelling villain out of a Marvel Studios movie, which I haven't seen anything that's come close to Loki yet. So I'm excited for the prospects with Nebula.
What is Rogue Trooper?
Rogue Trooper number 2 by Brian Ruckley and Alberto Ponticelli. This is I don't know why either.
DMZ? DMZ.
There you go. And this is another IDW picking up a 2000 AD property. So like Judge Dredd. So you've got Rogue Trooper. Rogue Trooper is such a ridiculous idea. You've got this place called New Earth, NU-Earth, where there's the Norts and the Southers, and they're having an ongoing civil war on this planet. And it's completely radioactive wasteland outside. And your blue Rogue Trooper guy is the last surviving, you know, biologically engineered super soldier. And he's traveling with his three buddies, but they're dead. But within a minute after they each died, he took their minds basically onto a chip and put them into his gun, his helmet, and his backpack. So he has a talking gun.
Oh, man, I got the backpack.
A talking backpack. And it's funny because the gun is named Gunner. The helmet is named Helm. Bagman is the name of the backpack. They all have ridiculous names that go with what they are. And they help him out in his you know, adventures. And it's a little like, I don't know, if you like Prophet, if you like crazy cosmic war stories, it's just strange and fun, and he's blue, and I like it quite a bit.
Josh, in addition to Moon Knight, Veil was probably the other book where you and I were on the fence about after the first issue. So now we got issue 2 of Veil, Dark Horse, Greg Rucka, artist whose name I'm not going to attempt to butcher. What did you think of this one?
It didn't fare as well as Moon Knight. I am loath to not continue, but I also don't want to continue because all right, where is she from? All right, it's fine. But it seems like there's a mystical element, which I don't particularly like. I just don't.
Well, we knew there would be. She's, you know, she was mind controlling people. And this issue, we find out she was summoned by rich dudes.
That part was kind of interesting.
They summoned her to be their sort of weapon, and the guy who did the summoning, the non-Constantine guy, said basically, you don't work like that. The summoning can happen anywhere. She could pop up anywhere, any time, any place.
Years ago in France, it doesn't, you know. Yeah.
But luckily, it was now, and so they don't have to worry about the time bit. But just it wasn't where they summoned her. It was in the subway. So now find out what she is kind of.
This book hasn't hooked me. I don't really like how it looks.
Yeah, I don't like the art.
It doesn't feel like the Greg Rucka stories I like so much. If he's
the art, right. I thought the art was much more controlled in the first issue. I thought this issue he got much more exaggerated with the characters, which I didn't necessarily love.
You know what I think is missing? I think it's one of those things where you have a scene where one character is totally lucid and the other one, like I feel like the character, the girl, Vale, wasn't consistent from the last issue to this one. This one, all of a sudden, she was interacting more, and I feel like maybe there weren't the scenes where we know why he's doing anything, why he's doing this, why he's helping her. What, like, it's weird.
Right.
Just be like, let's just take her to Bellevue and call it a day.
Right.
I don't know what.
And he's very passionate about helping her.
Yes. Yeah.
It's not just because she's attractive, or at least it shouldn't be. Because listen, that only goes so far. Eventually, the cops get involved, and you're just like, you know what? Don't have the time for this.
Yeah. In Manhattan, you see enough crazy, beautiful people. It's not. I don't know. I wanna like it. I don't.
Also, this is a minor pet peeve, but it keeps popping up everywhere, at least where the New York cops are involved. New York cops are not allowed to have goatees and or beards.
Really?
I mean, yeah. That's why the cop mustache joke comes from. The only facial hair they're allowed to have is mustaches.
All I know is that New York cops just drive down the street together in unison once a day for no reason.
Right. Show of force, Josh.
Show of force.
So I don't know. I'm very much on the fence with this one.
Yeah.
There were things I liked more about this issue than the last issue, but I don't know that I really want to know more than that. I don't know.
You don't have to like everything.
No, that's certainly true.
So there you go. That's those are books.
Those are the books of the week that came out, and we talked about them. There are more of them that we didn't talk about. If you want to talk about them, go to ifanboy.com in the comments section of this show and talk about them. That's what it's for.
It is.
Let's do an audience question from Bjorn.
Bjorn from Brooklyn.
Bjorn is probably very cool.
I imagine.
Bjorn probably lives in Williamsburg.
Speaking of mustaches.
Bjorn's just a hip, cool guy.
I like how we put him in a box immediately.
And well, his name is Bjorn from Brooklyn. He's got one foot in the box.
I think the way that Bjorn would be more if he was just not cool at all. But he's in Brooklyn, so he sounds that way.
We know a Bjorn. I don't know that he's from Brooklyn.
I feel like he must have spent time there, and that's probably why.
And that Bjorn is a cool guy, so I'm not knocking you, Bjorn. I'm saying you're in good company. Guys named Bjorn usually very cool.
Yeah, I gotta go with that.
Nice shoes.
Yeah.
Some cool hair.
Is there a question here?
Bjorn from Brooklyn starts says,
for big hammers.
I started reading comics again a few months ago. I've been staying away from DC and Marvel, reading mostly newish Image, Dark Horse, Vertigo series. That's also DC, Bjorn. No shortage of good stuff there. Looking over my subscription list of around 40 books, I wonder what the ultimate fate will be for each. Will it have a long run and come to a satisfying conclusion? Will it just go on forever? Or will it fizzle out and get canceled? With some series, Saga and Chew, I have a real sense the creators really know where things are headed. Others, Morning Glories, not as much. So my question for you, what is the average trajectory of an ongoing series? Since that is probably difficult to answer, I would like to challenge you to speculate in the longevity of the following titles. Bedlam, Drumheller, Manhattan Projects, Lazarus, Sex. If you have actual information, I'd be interested too, of course, but in lieu of that, guesses and speculation are fine. And we didn't do any actual... We could have asked somebody. There's somebody we could have asked, but we're not going to lean on that, press that button too many times.
Really just read the question just before the show.
So. Right, so we didn't ask because he's out of the office right now. Otherwise, I would have.
I have some phone.
So, do we want to tackle what's the average trajectory?
It's hard to say.
See, this is interesting. The thing that I've been thinking about a lot lately, because if you're like us, and I think you are, you've been noticing that. See, that's why David Letterman is an influence. I don't know if you caught that, but anyway, a lot of Image series, just specifically, have been coming out, and we've been reading a lot of number ones and a lot of new series. And it is not viable to be able to keep reading them forever, is what I'm finding.
I don't know if it's that so much as it's not viable for the stories to go on forever.
That too, but what I find is that a thing that was kind of interesting, like I've got a lot of series now that were like had an interesting first couple of issues, and now they're just going, and I don't know what the point is.
Right.
Or I just find like, on a long term, like I think something could be really fun with the first couple issues, and then after 8, 9, 10, 12 issues, you're like, all right, I don't know that I really want to stick with this for that long. Not every show has to have has 8 26-episode seasons, you know?
And I think it's interesting that they're not really saying either, and I wonder if that's a deliberate tactic to say this is a 10-issue series, this is a 6-issue series, this is a 60-issue series. You know, we don't really know. There's the whole thing, we all love Satellite Sam. It's a murder mystery, ostensibly, but it's also a book about the TV industry. It could go 12 issues. It could go 60 issues.
Well, that's one that
I don't know what to expect.
Well, that's the thing is like that's one that I'm now kind of starting to be on the fence about. Like I really liked it at the beginning. But now I kind of like. So when are we gonna know something about what's happening or what the point is? Because now it's just a lot of dysfunctional people interacting with each other for some reason.
And I think with the volume of things that we read, the further in you get, the more complex the mystery is. And the you know, the more tenuous you are with the details, because they've stopped reminding you at this point. Yeah. So it's easy to pick up a number one issue, a number two issue. The further along you get, it's tougher to keep track of everything. And also, it's the further away you get from the original conceit, and that might not be, you know, they might have gone a direction that, you know, you weren't anticipating.
That you weren't necessarily signing up for. Well, if you want to look at like his examples, and I think that this stuff pretty much also applies to mainstream superhero kind of stuff. I mean, I think I can think of a lot of DC and Marvel series that sort of started out and you get 10, 12 in, you're like, all right, that's enough. I'm good. But like, okay, so Bedlam, I don't know. I didn't read it. I actually read the first one. I didn't like it, so I stopped. Although it's drawn by Ryan Brown, so our last book of the month. Drumheller, did anybody read that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very strange. It's very esoteric.
Manhattan Projects, and I'm going to go ahead and lump in all of the other Jonathan Hickman Image books.
Mm-hmm.
I'm totally falling
so out. East of West.
Yeah, but that's not really the question. Does it feel like it's a long series? Does it feel like it's a...
I don't know.
East of West feels like a long series.
But it feels like we're just... Here's a little of the world, and here's a little of the world, and here's a little... And it just... I find they're becoming less compelling as we go on.
Mm-hmm. I feel just, and this is complete speculation, but I feel like I don't see them being like 60 issue books.
I assume they're all 60 issue books.
Right. That's my default for Image books. And I think Lazarus and Sex feel like that.
Lazarus definitely feels like that.
Yeah, they're playing a long game there.
I don't feel any attrition in Lazarus. I look forward to it every time because I see there's one person whose journey we're kind of going on and everything else is going on around it. Whereas if you look at Satellite Sam, like I'm not entirely sure who I'm supposed to be focusing on. And I don't really know who most of the people are in 50% of the book. Whereas right. Lazarus, like it's pretty clear that you're with the girl whose name I don't remember at this moment. Sex is exactly the same way.
Yes.
Sex, we're following that one main character, not Batman, as he Batman. Just keeps not getting off.
Sex and Lazarus feel like novels that we're you know, 20 pages into. I don't know about it. Manhattan Projects, I'm reading in trade. I can't really say. But for an Image book comes out, I just assume it's meant to be long-term.
You know what it is? If a show starts to feel like Lost to me, then I start to lose. If a book starts to feel like Lost, I start to lose interest. Where I'm thinking, oh, you're kind of making this up as you go. Well, you don't really have the ending, or at least you have the ending, but you don't know what happens in the middle. Which, by the way, is normal. But there's a way to, I guess, cover that. You know what I mean? There's a way to not make it feel like that. Because I don't ever want to feel like I did with Lost again.
I loved it.
I know you did. You and I are different. That's okay.
It just the question that Bjorn asks is difficult. You don't really know what is going to happen with any of these books. It could fall flat on their face one day, or it could be Why the Last Man, or it could be Preacher. And in terms of an overall satisfying story, what I mean.
It's like how often it goes. It's almost issue to issue at this point because there's so much competition, I guess, for your dollars and your attention. You know, like Chew. He's been around for a really long time, and it ebbs and flows a little, but I'm usually pretty happy to get a new Chew.
But you know what else was good they did with Chew was they said originally, you know, like once it hit a certain number and the sales didn't go down, they said, okay, we're in for 50 or whatever it was. Yeah. Like this is going to go 50. Or,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Like they made that clear very early on. This was the length of the story to expect. Mm-hmm. Whereas I don't know how long.
That's a good point.
Starlight is going to go, or how long Black Science is going
to
go.
See, Starlight, so, though, in my mind, I want it to be 8.
And I think that's probably more accurate because I think Mark Miller does those things, but they didn't say 2 of 8 or whatever on it. And it does affect the way you read something. It does. It's you can't help it. It's like when you watch a movie or TV show, you go, oh, well, I'm 3/4 in, so this, you know, this is going to wrap up soon, or there's 10 minutes left. Or, you know, it just mentally you have your brain changes the way you're taking in the story, knowing how much story is left.
Well, it's like when you hold the book, you know how much of the book is left, like a novel. It's a good point.
And they introduced that with like with Kindles, you can and different ebooks, you can see they predict how much longer it's going to be before you finish the chapter.
Yeah, I like that.
So it's interesting. It's an interesting, and I wish they would say it. I wonder if there's a reason. I'm sure there is a reason why they don't. Because I don't want you to not buy a mini or whatever.
I don't know that it's that specific. I think it's a more with, like, when you bring a book to Image, you're like, oh, I want to tell this story. I don't know how long I'm going to get to go. So
right.
I don't want to hedge my bets so that if I plan to go to 60, but I have to stop at 20, I can try to wrap it up successfully.
Sure.
Saying so.
It could also be see what sticks to the wall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these books may or may not succeed. If they do, then if the writer or the creators surely have a story in their head, that a clear story, then they'll get there. If not, they'll make it up as they go. I don't know. It's hard to say. I don't know if I'm making any sense anymore. But thank you, Bjorn from Brooklyn, for writing into us. And he did that through contact@ifanboy.com. You can write us there or leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Tell us who you are, where you're from, and keep it around 30 seconds. That's how you get on the show. That's how you join the fun. This is all just fun. We're just having fun here.
Someone loses an eye.
Now,
that's very unlikely.
Really quickly, I wanted to mention, this is sort of off the beaten path, but not really if you listen to the show for years. Did everyone else on this show currently watch Community last night?
I did.
Or when we record this on Friday?
I saw the promo.
Oh, Paul!
Well,
I sent an email about
it. I'm not caught up.
You didn't need to be. It was not completely unrelated to everything that happened on this.
There's a lot of continuity on that show.
Not on this episode.
Oh.
Oh, Paul.
Hey, listen, it's not really possible to give something away about it, so I wouldn't worry about it so much. But I only have one question. How in the world did this happen?
I don't know. And if
I mean, it's not like this is Cartoon Network.
No, and I was one. I mean, as just from where I am currently in my life right now, I'm watching it going, the licensing issues in this are just, what? How did this even pull off? Basically, if you don't know, you don't watch Community, but you're a fan of all things that we like, last night's episode or this week's episode was a almost completely animated episode in the style of G.I. Joe.
It was an animated G.I. Joe episode.
Including
ads.
Most of the voice actors. The original voice actors, which, by the way, 75-year-old Duke, you can really hear it in his voice.
Yeah, you can.
And it really made me sad that the guy who voiced Cobra Commander was dead. Chris Latta. No, who was it?
It was Rob Schraub.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Indie comic book creator / TV guy.
But it was a completely animated G.I. Joe episode, including the G.I. Joe toy commercials. And the characters in the show were all G.I. Joe characters, except for the dean, who was Cobra Commander's assistant. And it was beautifully bizarre.
Also, if you're going to go with canon, the death of Destro.
Yes.
So that happened.
Jeff figures out he can kill Cobra people, and they all freak out because they can actually die. But it was amazing. And I kind of wish I didn't know it was coming. Because they started promoting it a while ago, and I alerted Josh and Ron about it. But
I wouldn't have known it was coming if it wasn't for you. Just want to put that out.
And I felt kind of bad about that as it started, because I was like, if I hadn't known, I just turned on Community, and this is what had happened, I would have probably had a heart attack. So probably better I didn't know. But geez,
there's a guy with a parrot.
No, well, that was
Annie was dressed.
Annie was the female version of Shipwreck.
Okay.
And her parrot were her breasts.
Tight ship.
Yeah, tight ship. But it was
three kids.
It was very funny and bizarre and strange and a parody of G.I. Joe and a very also interesting, insightful look at the characters, too. They juggled a lot of things, but including, you know, it was basically the whole thing was that Jeff was turning 40 and didn't want to face that.
I think so we all relate to that.
He got injured in his coma, had a G.I. Joe cartoon fantasy about all of them, and that was the premise of it. But crazy.
How did this happen?
I don't know.
I just don't see, like, this is the move of a show that's about to get yanked off the air.
Well, totally, and I get why Except Community did it. I don't get why G.I. Joe and Mattel did it.
I don't get why NBC did it.
Well, I don't give a fuck.
Really?
Yeah. About Community at this point, but like, you know, the characters and they weren't always portrayed in the best light. That's, with licensing stuff, usually that has to happen.
You know, I thought of that, but
Hasbro.
I honestly think with their experience with some of the stuff that was done at IDW with specifically with the Cobra series, I feel like they're game.
I do, but also like the ending bit where it was Cobra Commander and. Who was the other one talking with Jeff about boobs? And they wanted to go back with him to the real world because they'd never seen a boob and they wanted to know what it was like.
I don't know. I think that like things like those comic series and I think the realization that the audience for that property, that show as it existed then, are us. It's not kids. Yeah. So who cares? No. And that's a smart move, I think. You know, if they're trying to retain the sort of the chastity of the old series, then they wouldn't have done it, but I think that would be ultimately pointless.
It was just crazy. It was so bizarre. If you are at all interested in this and you haven't seen the show, and again, you don't necessarily need to watch Community to watch this episode. I mean, obviously the interpersonal stuff won't make as much resonance to you, but it's on Hulu right now.
Yeah.
You know, go watch it if you haven't seen it. If you're a G.I. Joe fan, especially if you're a fan of the cartoon, it's a bizarre new entry in the canon. I mean, there's even a PSA ad at the end. There's a ton of the toy commercials in the middle. At first I thought they'd just taken an old toy commercial because they shot it and it looked exactly like the old toy commercials, even the grain of the film. It was really genius. Yeah. I've decided. Really genius.
Yeah. You're very happy about this.
I couldn't believe it when I first heard about it. It's crazy. And
it takes a lot of balls to do that well in a way that doesn't make me roll the shit out of my eyes.
Right. Well, because they went for it. They went for it. They didn't fully. They didn't go half-assed into it. Fully. I mean, it was the opening. They had the opening song, music. I mean, it was everything. It was an episode of G.I. Joe.
It must have cost a lot of money.
I don't know. So check that out, Paul. You can go watch that right now. You don't need to wait.
Okay, I'm gonna wait till the DVD.
G.I. Joe was a cartoon series that Connor and I watched during the 80s when you were an infant.
I've seen episodes. Yeah.
Yeah. I
don't. And
it was what we watched every single day, before or after school, depending on when they aired the episodes.
They had the original Flint voice, the original Duke voice.
Well, original is a bit of a stretch.
Well, those guys are old now.
Emphysema Duke.
Hey, but he had it. It was still Duke.
Yeah. Yeah.
So check that out. I would highly recommend it. It's on Hulu. I just looked it up while we were talking. Also, check out, coming to you on this feed right behind the show, the special edition podcast for Captain America the Winter Soldier, in which Paul and I and our friend Jeff Cannata from DLC and Newest, Latest, Best and formerly of the Totally Rad Show got together to talk about Captain America the Winter Soldier, the latest Marvel Cinematic Universe film. So that'll be available to you on iTunes behind this show or your podcast aggregator behind this show or directly for streaming on ifanboy.com.
It's a wonderful conversation, I imagine.
Paul!
Okay, other things in the works. CBR Sunday Conversation every Sunday at noonish Eastern, talking to writers and artists about their extracurricular activities. Recent ones, I talked to Mike Mignola on the occasion of the 20th anniversary of Hellboy, which is pretty cool. What else? Scott Snyder, we talked about True Detective. And coming up, Mahmoud Azrar, we talk about time travel movies and video games and traveling and all that kind of stuff. So keep an eye on CBR Sunday Conversation.
Paul, why don't you talk about comics?
We do talk about comics sometimes. I talk about comics a lot with Mike Mignola. I talked about how he doesn't like pancakes.
Yeah, that was interesting. I like that.
He doesn't get why it's so popular.
Because it's awesome.
And he's kind of bothered by it. And I was like, it's really good.
Now I definitely never want to interview him. That's a rule I have. I don't interview Mike Mignola. I'm keeping him at arm's length. And now that you've said that, I know that I made the correct choice.
Did not sleep that night, but he was very nice.
Like that.
Especially because it was like 9:15 in the morning for him when I was talking to him.
I can explain to him why that story is good.
I'm sure you can't explain to Mike Mignola why the story is good, Josh.
I probably not. But that's the difference between me and most nerds.
Go. You're next in the script.
You can go to ifanboy.com. I can't get over this pancake thing. You can comment on this episode or on the other ones. You can correct our wrongs, both large and small.
Or perceived, or unreal.
Yeah.
I'd be happy if the comment section this week was all people talking about that Community episode. I will be in there ways deep with all of you if that's what you want to do this week.
Who is Britta dressed like?
That's a good question. She's
like barbecue or something, but
yeah, kind of like one of those laser
or fire. I always get those two mixed up.
Firefighters are fighting fires.
That's barbecue.
She didn't look like one of the fire characters. Like, she looked like she would have had a laser.
Like one of the later, like the late 80s ones.
Yeah.
You can find the podcast there and all the other stuff at ifanboy.com, including all that past content if you're ever curious about our old shows, video and audio and all that such. So get there. Be there. Experience it. Waist deep.
Thundercats, ho. Follow us on twitter.com/ifanboy and facebook.com/ifanboy to find out what the pick of the week is before the show. And you can follow us individually on Twitter at J.A. Flanagan, at C.S. Kilpatrick, and I'm Fuzzy Typewriter.
I liked the John Oliver's Tomax and Zaymot. If you hurt me, my twin feels it, and he's just a waiter. Finally, if you like this show, please review it on iTunes. Leave us a review. It's how people find podcasts they're looking for, and it helps us out. It doesn't take you too long. And do that for any podcast you listen to. Paul's Fuzzy Typewriter Show. Many people who you heard those past month while Josh was slacking off have their own podcast. Go review those shows. Help everyone.
Fuck yourself.
spread the iFanboy love.
Oh, we needed that.
I have a headache.
I've had a headache for 4 weeks.
That sucks, man. The other day I slept for 10 hours.
I slept 10 hours last week. That's it
for this week's show. Thanks for listening. Josh may or may not be back this week, but until then, next week. But until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
Go fuck yourself.
Just everybody.
Whatever.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also like, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.